So I'll start off by chanting the four vowels. Anyone that knows it is welcome to join in. Shigu Segan Mo On Shujo
speak about Zen and ethics, and I'm going to do my best. I'm not quite used to remembering my reading glasses, because they're a new addition to my collection, so I might not be able to read my blur of a note that I've got here, but I'll do my best. So I'm going to speak about Zen and ethics. So the first thing to say is that, contrary to, if you like, 1950s and 1960s beat Zen, ethics is an important part of Zen. Master Deshimaru spoke about following other teachers, spoke about there being three aspects of Zen practice. Kai, Zhou, E. And Kai is the ethical guidelines, the precepts that we follow in Zen. Zhou is meditation, and E is wisdom. And so the three kind of underpinning pillars of Zen are the ethical action, meditation, and wisdom. And these three are considered to go together, not to be separate from each other. And if you look at the vows, the Buddhist vows that are taken if you take an ordination, if you take the what we call the Bodhisattva ordination, which is a lay ordination open to anyone who wants to connect with the practice, make a commitment to the practice, then the three primary vows we take are, first of all, make sure that our actions don't cause harm. The second is try to endeavour to bring about good through our actions. And the third is make sure that good is for the benefit of all, not for oneself or for a kind of subset. Act for the good of all. And another way of thinking about it, because as I'm sure you know, the Buddha's teachings were centered on our relationship with suffering. So another way of thinking about it, rather than talking about good, because sometimes we think about good or harm as meaning certain things, or evil. So that's not how the Buddha thinks about it. The Buddha thought about it in terms of our relationship with suffering. So the first commitment we make is to act in such a way as to not increase suffering in the world. And then the second is to find ways to reduce suffering in the world. And then the third is make sure that as the actions that we take to reduce suffering in the world are for the good of all. That's effectively what those three major vows that are taken in the ceremony say. So there's a story. I don't know if this is a Zen story. I don't know where this comes from. I've heard it in Zen circumstances, but I'll tell you it anyway. So I don't know where it comes from. There's a story about a wise old woman in a village. And a young man came up to her and said, "What's the secret of a good life? How can I lead a good life?" And she said, "Act in such a way as to not hurt other people." And the young man said, "Well, that's obvious. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that's the answer. It's simple." And she said, "Well, it might be obvious, but it's still profoundly difficult even for an old woman to do it." So So what is obvious and simple is not easy to put into practice. And so then the question is, if we take these guidelines, what is it, how do we put this into practice? And from a Zen point of view, what's key to putting it into practice is the other two pillars, the act of meditative awareness and the wisdom that comes from that meditative awareness. And I just want to be clear about what's meant by that wisdom in this sense, that it's wisdom not in terms of knowing, but it's wisdom in terms of seeing the way things unfold and noticing the way things unfold. So the Zen approach to these ethical guidelines is to cultivate awareness through our meditative practice. Cultivate awareness and observe through meditative practice, observe the patterns in our life and in the life of others. So we observe the arising of the patterns that happen. And so what we do is we observe how the different ways in which our actions cause suffering. We observe it, so we don't necessarily try to create kind of, sometimes it's helpful to think about it systematically, but ultimately what we do is we simply observe in the moment. We observe in the moment how we do things which maybe in the moment or maybe later on we realise we're mistaken, we're errors, and we see the suffering that they produce. It might be suffering for ourselves, it might be suffering for others, it might be suffering for ourselves and others. So we see how the mistakes that we make produce suffering. And then by seeing the mistakes that we make, we take a different relationship with those mistakes. The idea is that by noticing these mistakes, they have less power over us. Noticing the actions, the repeated patterns that we make, they have less power over us. Initially it might be, so to begin with, you might not realise the mistakes that you make until afterwards. Then it comes to a stage where you notice it in the moment of making it. And then there comes to a stage where you notice it as it's rising up inside you. And as you notice it rising up inside you, it no longer needs to express itself in the world in the same way. And so you kind of, it goes back and back and back and until the mistakes don't arise and do not manifest themselves in the world in the same way. So that's how we do it. It's primarily the practice is to notice and observe. Ideally, it's something where we notice and observe, and naturally, the act of noticing is enough to change our relationship with the things that cause us problems. The act of noticing is enough to transform it. However, having said that, that's not always the case. We all know that there are some things which are different for different people, but we all know that there are some things which are more of a challenge for us. There are certain patterns which are a problem for us in different for different people, as I say. And so with those patterns, we might want to be more active and firm and make a commitment to put a lid on it, put a cap on it. So the most extreme example might be someone who is suffering from alcoholism and needs to make a clear decision, clear commitment to avoid it, maybe for all their life, maybe for a period of time, whatever, but making a clear commitment to avoid it. And the difference about, so we can all make commitments, whether it's to giving up smoking, whatever, to take New Year's resolutions for these different things. So it can be something as strong as in alcoholism, or it might be something that's more about, okay, I know that I tend to shout, and I decide to make a real effort when I feel the anger rising up to not shout, or whatever. It's different for different people, as I say. But you can make a commitment in that way. And the difference between that and maybe the more traditional resolution is that if that commitment is founded on observation of the mistakes that you've made in the past and seeing the suffering that comes from them, then that makes it easier for you to keep it. You see what I mean? So the relationship, but by observation, by deep observation of the suffering that these things cause oneself and one's and those around oneself, it makes it easier to make these kind of commitments to not do something. But as I say, they're not always necessary. Sometimes just simply observation is enough to transform these things. And Zen is about cultivating awareness and wisdom through this observation. So those are the three major vows. Effectively, not to do harm, not to cause suffering, and to find ways to reduce suffering in the world. Those are the three major vows. And then, I'm not going to talk about it in detail, but if you take the ordination, the Bodhisattva ordination, then there's 10 vows which go with it. And what they are, they're not separate from those three. They're really, those three are the big ones. Those cover everything. Those are all you need. But the 10 that follow are ones that remind you where we tend to make mistakes in our life. Okay, as I say, it's different for different people, but there's a list of things where it's a reminder of different areas where we tend to make mistakes in our life. It might be to do with our attachment to desire for stuff. It might be to do with our relationship with our sexuality. It might be to do with our relationship with our anger and the way we cause harm in the world. That's through our anger. So there's different ways that these things can manifest. And the 10 vows are reminders of areas where it's known we all, or to a greater or lesser extent, struggle with these things. So the 10 vows are different areas of the life where we need to particularly pay attention. So the Zen attitude, so it's different in different schools of Buddhism. The Zen attitude is that these vows are points of awareness rather than thou shalt not, you see what I mean. So they're points of awareness. They're where you focus your attention. And as I say, the vows are a catalogue of areas where you might want to focus your attention. And by noticing where you cause suffering for yourself and others, tells you where in your life you need to focus the attention most. And so that's what the vows are about. They're about bringing the awareness that comes from meditation to different areas of your life and not shirking from different things. So we can have a blind spot, and the vows remind us, okay, don't forget that, make sure you look there. So that's what the vows are about. Yeah, so what I wanted to say now is actually, if we take an example, so I wanted to take the example of the ways in which we harm others. So that's one of the vows, is not to cause harm. And so I just want to talk a little about that one in particular, but I would say that the similar thinking applies to all of the vows. Okay, so I don't want to go, and maybe another day we can have a look at some of the other vows. But and if we think about what causes us to cause harm in the world, what causes us to cause harm, then from the Buddha's point of view, at the root of harm is anger. So anger is the seed of harm from the Buddha's point of view. And there's very, very obvious incidents of harm in the world where people inflict violence on others. There's various obvious incidents. But Jean Babi, who was one of the two founders of this dojo, together with his partner, later wife, Nancy, he used to say that the absence of violence is not peace. Absence of violence is simply absence of violence. What is peace is what can happen inside us. Peace is something we must find within us. It's not something that is simply a state of affairs out there. You know, it's not kind of, you're either at war or you're at peace. Peace is something that constantly needs to be worked on by looking at inside our hearts and seeing what goes on inside our hearts. And he said and in fact, he's a great example, because he's someone who struggled with anger. He was someone who could get very angry. But nonetheless, I would say that he struggled with anger and had a lot of success, because he was, from my understanding, his relationship with us in the UK when he came here, there was a lot less anger in it than there had been in his younger life. So it was something that through his practice and his awareness that this was an issue for him, he was able to change his relationship with. So anyhow, so it's basically anger. Anger can make us inflict it is the source of violence in world. And anger, the interesting thing about anger is that, you know, there's obvious forms of anger, but there's more subtle forms of anger which inflict themselves in more subtle ways. And that's what we need to watch inside our own hearts, is to see the way that anger, in its subtle forms, manifests in our lives, and think about our relationship with that. So, to give you an example, if someone just winds you up a bit, and you want to get your own back on them, you find subtle ways of getting your own back on them. Maybe making them look small, maybe bitching about them behind their backs, whatever. You know, so they're subtle ways, and those feel good in the moment. You know, it's nice to get your own back on someone. There's a kind of certain pleasure, certain kind of sense of kind of righteous self-righteous anger and revenge that comes through these things. And those little subtle games that we play are exactly the same as the games that play out over thousands of years in places like Israel and Palestine. You see, I mean, it's exactly this, the cycle, the same little subtle games we play where we inflict small hurts on someone else, and those small hurts make them in turn want to inflict small hurts on us, are exactly the same source as what can spiral out of control and produce large conflicts. And so thinking about our relationship with the way in which we inflict those small hurts by watching the games that our mind and our ego plays, the way that these little subtle threads of anger come out and manifest themselves on others. And trying to, as I said earlier on, by observing them, noticing the harm they cause us, noticing that even though they might feel good in the moment, they cause hurt for the other, and they rebound and cause hurt on us as well. Noticing that hurt that comes about, we can begin to let go of them. And it might be, as I say, through a firm vow, or it might be through a change, slow change in relationship. So they come from the same source. And so from Jean's point of view, our practice is about our relationship with our own anger, our own peace. That's where, for him, the foundation was. That we create peace within us. We create peace in our relationship with our own heart. And through that, that has maybe small, but nonetheless, ripples that spread out. Those ripples spread out and affect others around us, which puts into play the big vows to reduce suffering and share that reduction of suffering as widely as possible. So they might be small ripples, but nonetheless, they are ripples in subtle ways. So that is kind of fundamental to our relationship with the vows. So from a Zen point of view, we don't hold tight to these vows. They're not firm things which we believe every single person should do exactly this. And one of the reasons we don't hold that is because we believe that by having a firm definition of what one must do, it stops you thinking. By having a firm definition of what you should or shouldn't do, it makes what you should do can cause suffering, and it stops us thinking and stops us being aware by fixing. So an expression from one of the teachers in France many years ago was that to hold tightly to the vows is to shatter them, is what he said. He said that if you cling tightly to the form of the vows, you shatter them. You must have a far more dynamic relationship, and that dynamic relationship comes through awareness in the moment of the way that the different mistakes we make in our lives manifest themselves and cause suffering for ourselves and others. So I'll stop there. And so that's from a Zen point of view, it's very personal ethics. It's very much an ethics about our own relationship with our own psychology, our own relationship with our own awareness. And the belief, which Jean particularly embodied, is that by that own personal relationship, these things spread out naturally, unconsciously and automatically. So I'll stop there. I'll do the closing chant. Jishikai diki kunjiren kafu jashin chin chin jin cho ihi kishurin bujo song.